you have to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. You have to do it for yourself. Nobody's going to make it happen.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. In this episode, we have Abby Fields, a professional actor. Abby, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for making it in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, anything from my hometown.
Born and raised right here in Lebanon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you attended Lebanon High School.
I did.
Before we really dive in, you had a statement on the guest form to be on the podcast, and that statement was that you consider yourself, and there's probably many, many, many like you, a successful working actor that's not famous.
So, I mean, famous in the regards of, like, not on major screens or on Broadway even. Not famous means, you know, I'm working. That's what makes me successful, because with theater, it is a very, very tough job. It's a very tough field. You have to constantly be auditioning. You have to be putting yourself out there and hustling and getting people to know you, and to be working consistently mm-hmm. in the field is success. Even to just, you know, get a gig maybe 3 times a year, successful, depending on what it is.
Well, I imagine too, being an actor, it's almost like I would imagine you're trying to sell yourself, or trying to, like, I just picture dating for some reason in my head. Like, you're trying to convince other people, like, look, I am the perfect fit for this role. Whatever that role may be, you kind of transform into that character. Was that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It okay. is. It's constantly selling yourself. Social media is a necessary evil in our field. Mm-hmm. You have to show your life, show your work. Always show what you're doing.
Oh, I imagine. Right. It never ends. So now, growing up, we talked to you, you know, local here to Lebanon County. Talk about that. What was your life like growing up?
Living here, I grew up here in the 80s and 90s. And
not too long ago.
Not too long ago. And there really wasn't a lot of opportunity to do theater in this area. And I had parents who, they didn't know anything about it. I grew up, my father's side was a very musical family, but it wasn't theater or vocal performance or singing or anything like that. They were just musicians who played in bands and orchestras and, you know, for funsies. But there wasn't a lot of opportunity to perform in theater, and it was something that I wanted to do ever since I was little. My parents didn't know anything about it. They didn't know how to get me involved. They had to ask a lot of questions mm-hmm. to people, and I don't know, I got lucky and found really good voice teachers when I was in high school.
Okay.
And had a really great music teacher when I was in high school who helped nurture my talent and
brought it out of you, really, you know. Yeah. So, like, would you say, when was it that you realized, hey, I want to act, I want to be an actor? Like, was it middle school, high school? Like, what was the moment that you're like, this is what I want to do?
I just knew all the time. Like, I just don't ever remember a time where I didn't want to be. I remember what, I'm going to age myself so much right now.
What?
I remember watching Solid Gold when I was a kid. It's like, it was the kind of like an American Bandstand type show, but they had performers come on and they had Solid Gold dancers. And I remember being like, oh, I want to be a Solid Gold dancer.
Okay. Yeah.
And just always like singing. My mom always played records. We had like every record. Yeah. And she would play records all the time. We always music in the house, and just like doing little performances in front of my parents, and it's just something I always knew I wanted to do. And then when I went to elementary school, they had a talent show, and I was in third grade, and I told my parents, I'm like, I'm going to do this talent show, and I'm going to sing Tomorrow from Annie. And they were like, okay. They found accompaniment tracks for me, and I got up there and sang, and they were like,
dang,
holy shit.
She could do it. Yeah. Wow. So that was like, that was the moment that your parents realized, wow, you have some talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 So then from, you know, elementary, middle, and high school, did you then like ever try out for Lebanon Community Theater? Was that a thing?
It was a thing. Like all theaters. It was not, so like there weren't a lot of opportunities for kids.
Okay.
In that time. Like there are now.
It's changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there really weren't. It was a lot of times like older people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you maybe had to know somebody, or you had to be in the industry.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, community theater is completely different.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. It's not professional theater. It's.
Tell me.
It's theater. But it's not professional theater. It's just community organized, community run. And it's really like there's no pay, and it's for people who are just, you know, like they work muggle jobs, as
muggle
I like
jobs, yeah.
They work muggle jobs and just love to do theater, and that's their outlet.
So it's out of passion. It's a creative outlet. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also it makes theater accessible to communities. That's always, I love the concept of community theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Anybody doing theater anywhere, A++. But yeah, it just, I think there just weren't a lot, like, just, I don't know, like in that time, things for kids were taken for granted, and it was more like sports oriented, and, you know, it's Lebanon, it's not the epicenter of
isn't that the truth?
Arts and,
yeah, we love you, Lebanon County, but it's, yeah, it's not, yeah, the epicenter. It's not like a New York or a, I guess what a yeah, Hollywood or such, or Atlanta now I guess is big with movies and such. Mm-hmm. And theater and acting. So, you know, growing up, right, there wasn't much of an outlet for you, but you were able to, you know, do talent shows and things like that in school.
Yeah, talent shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there were musicals and plays in the middle school and high school. And I always did those.
Yeah. So then how, what was college in the cards, or were you thinking, you know, getting right into to acting or getting a full-time job? What were you thinking?
I went to college.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually started my college career at Florida State University.
Whoa.
And I was a vocal performance major.
Okay.
I have a really big background and foundation in classical voice. So opera. I wanted to be an opera singer.
No way.
Yeah. And I hated Florida State.
Too hot or what?
I hated it. I just hated Florida. Like, well, Florida State was in it's in the panhandle in Tallahassee.
Okay. Yes.
And that's not, Tallahassee's really not like Florida.
Yeah.
Like,
I've never been. So what is it? Like, what is it like?
It's more like Georgia with like the Spanish moss on the trees, and the beaches are far away.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like you're on a nice sunny beach and,
yeah,
you know, or at least near the ocean. It's probably a good drive.
It is.
Yeah.
And people there spoke with Southern accents. Like they were from, like Atlanta was not that far. I think Atlanta was like maybe an hour drive.
That's true. I guess it is up there. When you picture Florida, you're kind of, yeah, on the panhandle there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember I was walking in the mall one time, and somebody from Tallahassee came up to me, and they were like, "You're a Yankee, aren't you?" I was
like, "How do you know?" Like, what gave it away?
I was like, "What?"
Yeah, yeah. Old school.
Yeah, it was just some old man, and Yankee. I was like, "Goodbye."
Yes, right. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go away, you creepy old man.
Yes. So you go for vocal. Like, so what was that? So hold on, you didn't like it there. So what did you do?
I transferred. So I had an amazing voice teacher. She was mean as hell.
Was she?
She was so mean.
Strict?
Her name was Ms. Chinella. She's passed away. But she was like 70 years old when I was there.
Wow.
And she could still sing like she was in her 40s.
Oh my goodness.
She was amazing. And my, like, my experience at FSU was amazing. Like, I got to be around all of these incredibly talented singers and work. Like, I sang the Brahms Requiem and Robert Shaw conducted it. Robert Shaw is a famous composer and choral conductor. And I watched a masterclass with Marilyn Horne. She's a famous opera singer. And I got to be in the University Singers. And Dr. Andre Thomas is a conductor for University Singers at FSU. And he also has arranged and wrote pieces. And he's very, very well known in the choral world. And that man has an ear like nobody. So my experiences there musically were amazing. Mm-hmm. I just didn't love vocal performance major because it was music theory and sight singing, ear training. And I'm like, and you don't really get a whole lot of performance opportunity mm-hmm. as a vocal performance major.
Okay.
Like you sing in recitals. You sing in recitals, you'll sing in an opera. But it wasn't for me. Mm. I'm too goofy, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not disciplined enough, I think,
okay.
for opera.
Yeah.
So I was like, I want to do musical theater. And
that sounds like a perfect fit for you.
Yeah. I ended up transferring to Point Park.
Point Park? Okay. Yeah,
that's in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, I hate Florida. I don't ever want to be here again.
Yeah. Unless I'm at the beach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Disney World.
Yes. Yes.
And I want to go back to Pennsylvania. So I transferred to Point Park. And that is an excellent musical theater school. It's actually like in the top, I don't know, 15 maybe?
Yeah.
For musical theater.
Oh, wow.
Education. And also for dance. It's a really big dance school. And finished up there, and here I am.
And here you are. So I got to ask, you had put on the form, so I'm going to put you on the spot. I heard you can do a really good Pennsylvania Dutch, a Dutchy accent.
Oh, yeah.
Could you give us maybe like a 30-second Dutchy accent?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so, Well, now, what do I say?
Well, hey, now.
Oh, but well, hey, now. Yeah. Oh, my grandpa, he would call me Appy. Appy. Could you sing Ave Maria for me?
That's really good. Wow. Yeah, a Dutchy accent.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
Leppnen, you're from Leppnen.
I'm from Leppnen, yeah. Connie.
That's, oh my gosh. So, I love that. That was awesome. So you graduate from college. What was the next step? What was the next place? Did you come back home?
So
did you stay in Pittsburgh?
I stayed in Pittsburgh for a little bit. I actually had my daughter while I was in school.
Okay.
And that was a lot.
Yeah.
That was a lot. And I ended up just coming back home and raising her and working, you know, whatever job I could get. And when she was about 5, I got cast at Sight and Sound and was in the cast. I was in the original production of Ruth. I'm on the video. Yeah, I was there for 2 seasons and then stopped doing theater again for a while to raise my daughter and work a muggle job.
A muggle job.
I didn't do theater or any singing for like 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you love it so much.
I do. It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. I love it. It's more of like you do it and you do it and you do it and you like do the you live the hustle life of it, and then you get a little bit burnout and say, I just want to be a normal person and hop off on weekends, and then quit for a little bit mm-hmm. and then realize I am not cut out to work in an office.
Right. You probably get the itch, right? The creative itch.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. So, you know, when you were for those 2 seasons at Sight and Sound Theater, what was a day in the life of an actor? What was it like?
Well, I still lived here in Lebanon, so my commute was horrible.
Ooh, yeah, that is not a fun commute.
Yeah, it was like sometimes it would take me an hour and a half to get there.
I believe it
just
was traffic.
Just because traffic. Yeah. So the commute and plus Sight and Sound, when I was there, did 12 shows a week.
12 shows a week?
Yeah. 11 to 12 shows a week.
Wow.
Typically, it's 8.
Okay. Typically, it's 8.
Yeah.
And they did 12.
Yeah. And 8 shows is a lot.
So you're doing,
so
what, 2 a weekday? Or how did they break it down?
So we would work Tuesday through Saturday.
Okay.
Tuesday would usually be like one show. And then like Tuesday, Wednesday, usually one show or two. Thursday, two. Then Friday, Saturday, we'd call it the six pack. 3 and 3.
Oof.
Yeah.
I could see how, yeah.
Yeah. The third show on a Saturday night.
Just
that was special.
Was it special? Why do you say that? Just trying to get through it or just like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to get through it. And then sometimes the owner of Sight and Sound would come out after a six pack and decide to do like community outreach. And yeah, I don't want to give too many secrets. I don't want to talk about that too much.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Sometimes he would come out. Well, that was when Glenn Eshelman was still in charge of everything, but he's stepped away. And now his family runs it. But that was a lot.
That is a lot.
And then the commute home. Just, it was a lot of wear and tear on the body. Like, mm-hmm. It was exhausting. Exhausting. The shows are not 10 minutes long.
No.
They're full-scale productions.
What would you say like the average length is? Because I've been to, I think it was Noah or the Ark, maybe it was
Noah.
Yeah, Noah. I was there for that one. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I was little. It's like what? I would say a good 2-3 hours, or am I wrong?
2.5 to 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah, so something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you all called it a six pack. That's crazy. 3 shows in a day.
Yeah.
I believe. And then driving home, that would definitely wear on a person.
Sunday, I was in bed. I was in bed. Maybe should have been going to church, but I didn't.
Well, you wouldn't be able to stay awake anyway, probably. No. Yeah, no, yeah.
I wasn't even getting out of bed.
right. And so Sight and Sound, for listeners that might not know, located in Lancaster and off of Route 30. And I don't know how many it sits, but it's pretty big. Do you know how many roughly?
Yeah, 3,000.
3,000 people. Yeah. So 3,000 people. To me, it's a pretty big theater.
It's huge.
Yeah. Okay. So it is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember when I saw Noah, there was like live animals.
Live animals?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like lions and giraffes, I think.
Every show has live animals.
Every show has live animals?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, okay.
And they have things called animal hallways. Yes.
Tell me.
So like, obviously if there's a camel that needs to come on stage and they're bringing it through like the audience, they have to bring them up and around the animal hallway. So it's like, I can't really remember. It was so long ago, but there was like an entrance to the animal hallways that like we would have to walk through the animal hallway sometimes depending on our crosses on the stage and what was happening like technically on stage, like with deck moves or anything. Sometimes we'd have to go through the animal hallways to avoid, you know, getting hit by a large set piece.
Getting moved. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and they, it was like, it went across from one side of the theater to the other, and they were two huge hills.
Like underground. These are all underground.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I'm kind of picturing like, and this is probably way off, but I'm picturing like Gladiator when they open up, you know, the gladiators are out in the sand and they open them up and like the tigers or the lions come out from like under the ground. So it's, because I imagine is there like trap doors that open up to let the animals up? Or no?
No.
No, okay.
They would just, you could access them through like this. So there would be the sound booth. And then they would have doors. Like you can access it. They would have ushers at the doors, and you can access it through like that way. I don't really remember. I think maybe I blocked it out.
But it makes sense because, I mean, as somebody watching, I'm not thinking, oh, how did they get the camels or, you know, the lion or the sheep or whatever was up there. I'm not thinking, oh, they have a certain animal hallway that they have to get them through. But that's kind of interesting because it unravels kind of the curtain of, like, what goes on behind the scenes at these big theaters. So, you know, you do the Sight and Sound stint there, two seasons. Mm-hmm. With the six packs on the weekends, which is crazy. And it's not at all like the six packs. We're not drinking full six packs here, but we are drinking a garage beer. We're sipping on that to help wet our whistle. But like, so at what point then, you said you took a break for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was, again, just being worn down?
I didn't really, I mean, I had to raise a child and make money doing it. So I needed steady income and I wanted to be like, I wasn't there on the weekends. I was missing out on stuff. And like, it was hard when she was at school and I wasn't really auditioning or getting booked for anything. And I just was like, you know, I'll just get a regular job.
Yeah. Muggle job.
Yeah. And I did that for 10 years and I don't regret doing that. I had absolutely nothing to do with theater during this 10 years, which I do regret.
Yeah.
I do regret doing that. I should have kept up with it, but I was just really, when I left Sight and Sound, I was just really burnt out. Mm-hmm. I was really, really burnt out.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a sip break.
Sure.
This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. So you're raising a daughter, trying to chase your passion, right, of being an actor. You have the muggle job going on. For 10 years, though, you stepped away from theater, which whenever you don't do something for a long period of time, you know, you tend to lose.
I got rusty.
Yeah, you get rusty. Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So at what point then did you realize, like, I need this back in my life? I got to get back into theater.
Well, I really hated my muggle job. I hated it. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. So I started just reaching out to people. Like I reached out to somebody that I took voice lessons with and was like, I want to start taking lessons again and just getting back into theater. And she was like, yeah, that's where you should be. She helped me a lot. Like she was like, here, you should audition for these places. And I started auditioning for things and getting cast in them. And
that's great.
Yeah. And then
makes you feel good too.
It did. Like, yeah.
I'm back. Yeah.
And I worked with some film companies, not necessarily acting. I was like doing makeup for film companies.
Okay.
And I got to know a lot of people that way. And I was like, well, I'm an actor too. And it, like, when the part was right, they were like, hey, could you do this? And I would. So and then I got another muggle job.
I love that. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I have to do this for a little bit. And then I said, okay, I'm going to work this job and just do it, and I'm gonna really get serious about auditioning. And I started to do that. I got cast in a show. I also, here in Lebanon, started like working with Lebanon Valley Council in the Arts.
Yes.
And running like camps for kids. And that was really like gaining a lot of momentum and was really successful. And then the pandemic hit.
Oh, COVID. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The pandemic hit. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do a show. And then, okay, we're going to put it on hold for a little bit. And then 18 months went by.
Yeah.
And nothing. Nothing.
What a bummer. Like, yeah. You had everything ready, all lined up, doing something great in the community here.
Yeah. And then, just making money, doing it, loved it. And it just, the shutdown for, like, theater was shut down for 18 months.
Yeah.
That was really hard. And everything just kind of, like, lost momentum. And, like, people were doing things online.
Mm-hmm.
And streaming, and that lasted for a little bit.
Yeah.
But then everybody just got tired of watching the stuff on the screen. Like,
it's not the same as in person.
It's not.
You know, it's definitely not the sights, the sounds, the smells, being there in the cushioned seats, you know. It's not the same on the screen.
It isn't, but you know what's funny? A lot of regional theaters are struggling because people aren't coming.
Really? They're not coming back after COVID? They don't come out anymore?
Really. Like, they did once things open back up. Yeah. So when theater opened back up, I was so lucky to get cast in The Sound of Music at the Fulton.
Okay, yes.
And that show, like, they were selling out, which is huge.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, like, with that show, like, that was really successful, and their season, like, audience members were coming, but they also weren't prepared for COVID either. Like, a lot of regional theaters weren't prepared for COVID, so they had to cancel shows.
Yeah.
Because cast members would get it, and it was a mess. But
right
now that they've navigated through it, they're not getting the audience members because nobody really wants to go out anymore.
They're so used to, I guess, being at home with the screens and everything.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we'll stream it on Netflix.
Oh, it's a shame because, I mean, it's not just going out, you know, and having fun, getting out of the house, but, like, it's people's livelihoods. It's the going to the theater. It's that whole experience, right? And you're just staying home because it's maybe a little bit more convenient. Not saying that I wouldn't either, but it's like, you're missing out on something that's really, really cool. And if you don't support the theaters now, who's to say in 10 years or so if they'll even be around?
Theater is going to live. It's been around since the beginning of time.
That's true. It's way back to what a court gesture and such, and has grown. You know what I mean? If you think about it, what was, like, the first theater was it's always been
acting. Ancient Greece.
That's true. That goes way back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they had, I forget the theater there.
Colosseum.
The Colosseum, well, yes. Yeah, they did plays there and such, gladiators and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, what is it like performing in front of thousands of people? What does that feel like?
It's exhilarating.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a lively audience. It's fun. It can be a lot of pressure. It can be a lot of pressure. To tell a story is to tell a story and get to do what I love. And I can't ask for anything better than that.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, now, obviously we're not doing it live, but on the podcast, it's all about storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about building a relationship, a story as you're going. And it's, when I say relationship, it's like building it's all about relationships, really. Think about life in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know people, and all of a sudden, hey, they recommend you for this role, or did you audition for this? So I think connections and relationships are huge in life. What is success like as an actor for you? I know you mentioned, like, getting 3 gigs throughout the year, but, like, what else is there?
Just, all, like, always being in the craft. That's success to me. Always being in it. Whatever that looks like, if it's directing, teaching, performing, creating, that is success.
I like it. Yeah,
doing what you love.
You only get one shot. You only get one go around. So, like, why not go all in, you know? Yeah, 100%. So, like, when you audition, what is the process like to audition? Tell us a little bit about that.
So, I have my handy dandy audition book here.
Tell us a little bit about my that.
Yeah. Musical theater selections from the Golden Age and contemporary Broadway. So with auditions, you see the call for the show. You choose, you select from your book something that's appropriate for the show. So like if you're auditioning for Wicked,
okay,
say, you're not necessarily going to go in and sing Green Finch and Linnet Bird from Sweeney Todd, which is like a classical piece, or Glitter and the Gay. Maybe you will, but
yeah,
that would be great. But you choose a song that shows off your voice, and you have to sing, well, they usually say 32 bars of a song.
Okay.
That is in the style of the show. And you go in, you give your headshot and resume to the audition monitor. You walk in, you talk to the accompanist and say, here are my cuts. And then stand on the X, and the it's usually casting director or music director that are there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they say, hi, what are you singing for us today? And then you tell them and sing, and they say, okay, thank you. And you walk out.
Yeah. Wow. So like, okay, I love that you walked us through step by step. That was perfect. Because again, we had talked kind of off air. A lot of people don't, you know, get to be an actor or pursue this career, right? So they're just there, and they're looking for something special, right? They're probably maybe judging you on your, obviously, capability and ability to perform, but maybe also, maybe they're looking at characteristics or something. So how do you then handle, like, rejection, right? Because I'm sure you have to do way more auditions. Like, you do way
more
than
you get picked
for. Yeah, it's a numbers game, correct. Thank you.
It is a numbers game. Yeah. For sure. I think like 1 in 10.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So at a professional level, like I have gone and auditioned for Wicked on Broadway. I've auditioned for some, like just like the last year I've gone up to New York and done the auditions, and I forget what I was trying to say now.
Oh, no. Yeah.
On a professional level, like as far as your talent level, everybody there is talented. Everybody.
Yeah.
So like, it's not when you do the audition, they're going to know you're talented because you're there. You're not there to waste their time. This is a professional establishment.
Yeah.
So, it really just all boils down to what the director's looking for.
Okay.
And you just don't know.
That must be so nerve-wracking.
So you learn to get a thick skin.
Yeah.
You learn to get a thick skin. Like nowadays, like I would say, you know, prior to the pandemic, a long time ago, when I did auditions in New York, they didn't ever look at you in the audition, or like it was very cold.
Oh, wow.
Now it's not like that. Everybody's nicer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because like they're younger now, and this younger generation is much more kind and nice than, you know, the old farts.
The old farts. I love it. So I guess, yeah, because I feel like some movies that portray, you know, actors trying to audition. Yeah, they're very cold. They don't even acknowledge them. It's just like, okay, perform, you know, or whatever, sing. But now you're saying, like, this next generation, or from what you can tell, people are looking you in the eye, or like, how was your day? Or at least talking to you.
They're like, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
And thank you so much.
Yeah.
You sounded great. Or like,
it just makes you feel better, probably more comfortable.
Yeah, it's
in
nice.
The space.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, no one wants to not, I mean, you're all human. I wonder why they would do that back in the day. Maybe because they thought they were,
I don't know.
Like,
yeah. Who knows?
Who knows why people do what they do sometimes?
We've evolved.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned going up to New York and everything. You were a member of the Actors Equity Association.
Yes. I had my equity card.
So what is that? Tell me, because I have
no
idea.
So the Actors Equity Association is the union for actors. The Actors Union is a way for actors to be treated like regular people with jobs.
Okay.
So, like, if you work for so many weeks in a year, you qualify for benefits. Or like it's this is how we get a fair wage. Because sometimes, if you're non-union, these theaters don't want to pay you. And it makes theaters follow like safer guidelines as far as like taking breaks and
don't do a 6-pack or 12-pack or nonstop.
Taking breaks and saying like following a contract.
I guess I never thought about that, like the not having benefits or not being paid a reasonable amount for like what you're doing, your performance and your time and everything. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's gig work. It's gig work. You're never in the same place for a long amount of time.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you should be treated unfairly or differently or not paid what you're owed, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about that. So the Actors Equity Association is a union that brings actors together to get them the proper payment and treatment. Yeah.
Okay. So like everybody who works on Broadway is union. Now, if you go to somewhere like the Fulton or Gretna Theater or Totem Pole Playhouse or Media Theater, those are regional equity houses. So they have to hire a certain number of equity actors in a show, and they have to follow all of the equity guidelines. Now, if you're non-union and working in an equity house, you don't get the union pay. You get the benefit of being treated fairly and like a human being, but you don't get the pay.
Interesting.
Which stinks.
Yeah, that definitely does. Never would have even, you know, it never crossed my mind. You're just like, oh, these people are performing and they must be doing what they love, so they're getting paid and everything's good. But
yeah. So it's the Actors Union. I have my opinions about it.
Do you want to share?
I have my opinions about it. I don't want to say anything bad about it, but it's really hard if you are somebody who's not part of the top 1%. You have to pay to be in the union. You have to pay,
like, royalties or dues, I guess.
You have to pay dues.
Dues, yeah.
Yeah, you have to pay dues. It's like $90 every 6 months. Oof. You have to pay a joining fee, which is like, it's like $1,600 to join.
I imagine. Yeah, I was going to say probably over a grand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay so much up front, and then you can pay the rest throughout. Like, they give you like 3 years to pay it off. And they'll take it out of your check.
Yeah.
If you're working.
Okay.
In a union house. But the hard part is if you want to just stay in one area, don't be union. Because you're going to really limit yourself. Because there are only, like, in our area, there are only 2 equity theaters. And they only have a certain number of equity contracts. And then you're competing with all of these other people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the top, you mentioned top, like, 1%. Mm-hmm. Because I know...
Famous people.
Okay, that's where my mind was going. I would say Hugh Jackman, right? He was on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume he was in the Actors Equity Association. Oh, yeah. And he'd be like top 1%. So famous people.
Yeah.
So like...
I can't compete with Hugh Jackman.
How do you compete? Like you said, I guess you move around and find opportunities.
Yeah, you have to really... You have to be willing to not be in the area and travel to work at other regional theaters.
Now, would you say that's like a struggle or an issue that is in the acting community?
Yes. It's really hard to just get work. It's really hard to get work as an actor. It's just, and if you're, that's why it's like, if you're working, you're successful.
Yeah.
Because it's just really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really hard. And you have to constantly be auditioning and getting yourself out there.
Is there a mentor, someone that has helped you, guided you through this? Because you mentioned how hard it is and everything. Is there one person in particular?
There's not one person in particular. I mean, me.
There you go. Yeah.
Me, I'm myself, the one who made it happen.
Me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. Good for you to be like me. Yeah, because you're the one
who I'm making it happen. But there have been people who were definitely supportive, who have like guided me. They've been like, hey, I worked with a couple that they they have been on Broadway and done national tours and stuff, and I have been lucky enough to work with them, and they helped me like create my audition book.
Yeah.
And helped me prepare. And I had some really wonderful voice teachers that have helped me as well. Like I haven't seen her in a long time. But if you're listening, love you. She is in the union. She's a phenomenal voice teacher, and she also was like super duper supportive and offered advice and guidance.
Oh, what's her name?
Her name is Jennifer Felty.
Jennifer Felty.
Yes,
okay.
And she does. She runs a private voice studio, and she's great. And I worked with her husband at Sight and Sound.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. And at the end of the day, though, when it comes down to brass tacks, it's you. You're the driving force, you know, and I love that you're like, it's me, you know?
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
You have to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. You have to do it for yourself. Nobody's going to make it happen.
Through your journey, you know, in the acting world and even in life in general, has there been like a lesson that you've learned that you wanted to leave with the listeners?
Never give up. If it is something that you love to do, don't ever give up. Don't sell yourself short. If you know you're talented, don't sell yourself short. Don't be afraid to advocate for yourself.
I love it. The items you brought with you, let's talk about, because there's two we didn't talk about.
This is just a little script from an audition that I'm going to submit.
Okay.
So video auditions are a thing. That's a whole process in itself.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. You have to do... Okay. Circling back to auditions. Sorry.
Please. No. Go for it.
Squirrel.
yeah. Yeah. No, I'd love to know. Like, what's that
so
like?
So video submissions are... You have to be a lighting and a sound technician do it. Yeah. So you have to have lighting for it. You have to have like a nice background. Nothing too distracting. You have to edit...
Oof.
Thank God for iPhones. My yeah, God.
Seriously.
And like, that's a whole thing. But this is for a video submission for an audition that I'm doing. And they gave a little like side.
Okay.
They're called sides.
Sides?
It's just from the script. They give you like a few lines.
Oh, okay. So like a side. Like if you're eating dinner, you got a side of mashed potatoes or applesauce or french fries. It's a piece of the whole meal.
It's a piece of the show.
And I'm
I love food. They want to see your acting skill and how you portray the character.
Okay. So are you Amy or
George? No. I'm in the mom role era.
Oh, okay.
I would be reading for the role of Marmee.
Marmee, okay.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Yeah.
Thanks. And then this is an opening night program from the last production I was a part of.
Okay.
This is Beautiful at the Fulton. I was an external understudy for Beautiful at the Fulton.
Okay. Tell me.
I covered the role of Jeannie Klein, who's Carole King's mother. The show is about Carole King. If you don't know who Carole King is, yes, you do. Because she's written so many songs that you probably didn't even know she wrote.
I'm going to have to do some research myself. Yes. I feel like I should know these.
Yeah. So, yeah. A Natural Woman. Have you ever heard that?
Natural Woman?
Yeah.
I'm sure I have.
You've Got a Friend.
Yeah.
She wrote that song.
She wrote that song.
Yeah. the song for Gilmore Girls. She wrote that song.
She wrote that song. Wow. So what was that like being and what did you call it? I'm sorry, an understudy.
An external understudy.
External understudy.
Yes.
Let me, in my brief knowledge here of theater, understudy means you're learning from them. You're studying from them, right? In case they get sick or something happens, right?
You cover a role. So like typically understudies are still in the show. Like they might be an ensemble member or they might play a different part in the show. And they cover the role like one of the main characters, but they still like have their own track that they have to learn. And an external understudy means I was not part of the show. I covered one role, and if they needed me to come in, the stage manager would call and be like, guess what? You're going on tonight. I'd have to go in and do it. This is my... So Beautiful was my fifth production with the Fulton, and this is the third time I've been an external understudy for a show.
Okay.
When I was in Sound of Music, I covered the role of Frau Schmidt and all of the nuns except for Mother Abbess and Sister Margareta. I didn't cover that role. And I had to go on for Frau Schmidt. I was asked to be an external understudy for Man of La Mancha. And not even 24 hours after signing the contract, the stage manager called me and said, "How soon can you get to the theater?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "We are going to have a put-in rehearsal." Put-in rehearsal is if you're an understudy, you do a rehearsal before the show to just go over the blocking and like get it in your body.
Okay. Like a walkthrough?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. That's a put-in rehearsal.
Put-in rehearsal.
Yeah. Okay. So like when you're an understudy, you go to all of the rehearsals that the track that you're covering, you go to all of their rehearsals and watch. Oof. And take notes. Sometimes, maybe, you will get a rehearsal. Maybe. So for Man of La Mancha, I had never done the show. Didn't know anything. I knew about it, of course. I knew some of the songs.
Yeah.
Dream, the Impossible Dream. But I didn't even have a script. I didn't have a score. I had a song that I had to learn. And yeah, the stage manager was like, "You're going on tonight."
What?
And possibly the rest of the week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So what do you do? What's the first thing? Like,
so
other than panic, I would panic.
It was 10 o'clock in the morning and I was driving. My daughter and I like went to Starbucks or something.
Yeah.
And she, the stage manager called and I had her number on my phone. I was like, "Why is she calling me?" She said, "You're going on tonight." And I was like, "Oh, okay. I don't have a script." And she's like, "Well, we'll have one for you." "I don't know the song. I never learned it before." "The music director will work with you." She's like, "We'll support you any way that you need. Just get here as soon as you can." Okay. And then I hung up the phone and I was my daughter was like, "Mom."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Holy shit. Oh my God."
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, "What do I do?" She's like, "Well, first you drive home."
Right, get home. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, oh my God. I went on. I did it.
You nailed it.
Yeah. Was off book.
Professional. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like I would be so nervous. I mean,
I wanted to die.
Because that's talk about short notice, you know.
I wanted to die. But that was something also that was going on while COVID was like ripping through cast. People were being called.
Oh.
So speaking of Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
In The Music Man, Sutton Foster was out and they called her. She was like I don't know if she was the understudy or like a swing, but she was not in the area and they called her. Her name's Kathy Voitko.
Okay.
I actually got to perform with her in the Secret Garden concert at the Fulton. She's amazing and lovely. She had to go in as Meredith in The Music Man for Sutton. Yeah. And like, she just had an hour to prepare. And then Hugh Jackman gave this speech at the, like during the curtain calls after the show was over. Okay. And like said some like really, really nice things about her and called her forward, and it's on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an experience. I mean, and to work with like that talent level, I mean, holy cow. And I feel like he is such a top notch person that he would acknowledge. He probably said, he said some very nice things. And sometimes I feel like the people that are really, really good, the top 1%, can be a little maybe snooty and not care to give credit when credit's due, maybe, you know?
I don't know. Some people are. Some people are people.
Yeah. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did that, and then I was in, I was an external understudy covering the role of Mrs. Gloop and Grandma Josephine and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and now just Jeannie Klein and Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here, let's take a we'll take a sip break. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. To pick back up, how can our listeners connect with you on social media?
Well, if you just Google my name, you can find me. I am on social media. Right now, so I do teach private voice lessons.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
I do teach private voice and acting. I just started doing it in January with a place in Lancaster called Creative Pursuits.
Okay.
It's a studio that is offered to local performers or teachers who just want to rent a space and teach, and then also have the opportunity to pursue their performing careers. So
yeah, that's awesome. So what's the best way to like reach you if they want to, you know, reach you for that service?
Well, they can find me on social media, or they can go on the Creative Pursuits website.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah,
excellent. I will put that link in the show notes, that way it's easy for them to find. I'd like to do that. So before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
Yeah, I'm directing a Christmas cabaret right now for Creative Pursuits.
Really? Okay.
And the performance is, hold on, I gotta
look. No, yeah, take your time. Yeah, check it out.
Look at my calendar.
Exactly, yeah.
The performance is December 14th.
December 14th?
Yes.
Okay.
We have two shows. Don't ask me what time they are. 7 o'clock is the later one.
And they can buy tickets and everything online?
They can, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, then I'll definitely put the link there.
Yeah.
Perfect.
We have some really, really talented people, and I'll be singing a little something too.
Okay. So. Well, there we go. They can see you live.
Yeah.
I love it. Awesome. Well, then, yeah, Abby, if you're good, I'll close it out.
All right.
Sweet. Okay, great. Abby Field, a professional actor, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.